Chapter 44, The Evil Effect of Sunday Laws. A.T. Jones. We will present tonight the subject of Sunday laws and learn if there is any good basis for them. Tonight, taking up the civil side of the question, it is claimed that one day of rest is for the public good, and for that purpose it would be right for states to legislate upon it. But this is a mistake. First, to compel men to do no work is to force them to be idle, and kept up continuously enforces a great deal of idleness, and this is the root of untold evil, being a proverb in many languages, that Satan finds some mischief for idle hands to do. Idle men will always find something to employ themselves about in place of their lawful occupation. The knights of Satan are complaining greatly against employing prisoners for manufacturing purposes, because they say it tends to degrade labor and bring down the price of free labor. And in some places, New York for instance, they are powerful enough and have induced the legislature to prohibit this class of labor. I read from the New York Independent the following, as showing the result of this action. I read from its issue of April 18, 1889, the statement of Warden Dunstan of Auburn Prison. The enforced idleness of the convicted criminal demoralizes his mental and wrecks his physical system. Warden Fuller of Clinton Prison says, to avoid the debilitating effects, mental, moral, and physical, that are sequel to the confinement of prisoners in their cells without occupation, and in answer to the personal appeal of the men for work, I have made for them such employment as I could. Warden Brush of Sing Sing says, idleness in a prison is horrible to contemplate, especially to prison officials, who understand fully its consequences. The prisoners soon become restless, unhappy, and miserable. Time with them passes slowly. Their bodies soon become unhealthy, and the mind must become diseased. In fact, nothing but disease. Insanity and death can be expected from this condition. Physician Barber of Sing Sing Prison says, confinement in their cells, 5/6 of their time, in almost solitary idleness, appears to be forcing them back upon themselves, a prey to the baneful influences of impure thoughts, corrupt conversation, disgusting personal habits, physical and mental prostration, and moral degradation. General Superintendent of Prisons Lathrop says, idleness is the bane of a prison, whose malign influence no prison administration, however humane, ingenious, and energetic, has ever been able to overcome. Further, I have a letter from the warden of Sing Sing Prison in which he says, in my experience, nothing can be so bad in a prison as idleness. I consider it a crime on the part of the state against the prisoners, great wrong to the taxpayer and to society. It is a crime against the prisoner, as it totally unfits him for life in the world upon his discharge. Industry in a prison means that when a prisoner is discharged, he has for capital good health, sound mind, trained muscles, habits of industry and a trade. And more than this, he has the knowledge that he can earn a living for himself and family. On the contrary, if he is kept in idleness in prison, he must go out a wreck of a man, both physically and mentally, with no good habits and no ability to earn a living. It is, of course, worse in a prison than elsewhere, yet the effect of idleness anywhere is the same. They will find some kind of employment for the mind and body. So the entire people, if idle, will do. Another illustration is the degradation of the monks of the 4th century, who worked as little as possible. To read of the vice, lasciviousness, and degradation of these men is enough to convince anyone of the evils of enforced idleness. Now it is well known that Sunday is the worst day of the week for wickedness, crime, and drunkenness, worse than all the rest of the week put together. Those who are working for a Sunday law claim this is because the saloon is open. But is it a fact that saloons are open as freely on Sunday as on other days? No. Why then is it that more wickedness is committed on Sunday? Is it not because more men are idle on Sunday than on any other day? That it is not the saloon is apparent, but that it is because idleness prevails among a greater number is conclusive. I read now from Dr. Kraft's work, The Sabbath for Man, that nearly half the drinking and 3/4 of the drunkenness of this country takes place on Saturday evening and Sunday is too notorious to need proof or illustration. That is the time for compulsory idleness. It is not then the opening of the public houses, but the increased idleness. I read now from Professor Swing in regard to Chicago. To have 2,500 saloons open on any day of idleness is not only to rob the day of its prime quality, of its physical and mental use, but it is to transform the day into a positive evil. It is no advantage to common people to have a day of rest from common labor if the day is to bring an unusual outlay of money and an inflammation of the passions. How are they going to prevent the outlay of money and the inflaming of passions, then, if they compel them to be idle? If the stores are closed, and the manufactories are closed, and the spade and the pick are put aside for 24 hours, only that glasses and bottles may rattle, and cards be shuffled, and dice cast, and hard-earned money be wasted, then it would be better that the industry should rule all the 7 days of the week. Precisely. How then are they going to cut off the card playing? A man can gamble at home as well as in a saloon. The man that has gambling in his mind will do so. Regular labor all through the year would not injure a laboring man half as much as he would be injured by 52 days in the beer shop. A day which shuts a factory and opens a saloon is an absurdity. What a sweet day that must be when it is an open question whether those who are to enjoy it will live over it. A broken head is more probable than a saved soul. This has always been the case from inception of the first Sunday law, and will always be so where men are compelled to be idle. Statistics show that in Germany, where Sunday liquor selling is open and untrammeled, 53% of the crimes are committed between Saturday and Monday morning. Many a poor German woman dreads to have Sunday come. Her husband, who has worked hard and kept sober through the week, finds it a much more perilous affair on his weekly respite, and returns home from his Sunday recreation in no favorable mood for domestic peace. Then don't you see that the tendency of all Sunday laws is evil, and always must be so? Speaking of England, the author quotes one of the homilies. It doth too evidently appear that God is more dishonored and the devil better served on the Sunday than upon all the days of the week besides. Similar testimony, Dr. Kraft says, is given by judges, chaplains, and others of the effect of the Sunday liquor traffic in the United States. The records of the Brooklyn police courts showed that on Sunday there were twice as many arrests for drunkenness and disorderly conduct as on any other day of the week. Almost any Monday morning he, Judge Reynolds, was waited upon by the wives of laborers who had been arrested for Sunday sprees and asked to use his influence in their favor. If there were prohibition laws, there would not be as much of this, but the evils of enforced idleness would be apparent everywhere. In the face of all this evidence, I appeal to any honest, fair-minded man if it would not be better to allow men to follow their honest callings than to subject them to all the evils and temptations of an idle Sunday. Sunday liquor selling, says Dr. Crafts, is the pirate of commercial life, preying upon all other trades and interests. On Sunday it robs the church and the home of the presence of fathers and brothers. Dr. Crafts cited London as the best evidence of good from an enforced Sunday observance, and Senator Payne of Ohio, at the hearing before the committee, having charge of the Sunday rest bill, asked him this question. Have you seen the statement, lately made by authority, that London on Sunday is the most immoral and dissipated city in the world? And Dr. Crafts replied, that is due to liquor drinking, not to the fact that malls are closed. Now these men go about to reform this state of things by creating more idleness. Is it not plain that no state can afford to have Sunday laws and enforce them? Why, says one, is not a town better that keeps Sunday than one which does not? Yes, but is it the religion that town has, or the Sunday that makes the difference? Is there any religion in a Sunday? Is it not the respect the people have in their hearts that makes the difference? Further than all this, a man can on Sunday hire a livery team and race over the streets, get drunk, and do what he will, if he does not become too noisy or unruly and go free. But an honest man who follows his daily occupation is arrested and fined. What does this do? It puts a premium on crime, does it not? Well, then, no state can afford to declare as crimes any honest labor and put premiums on crime. No Sunday laws, then, can be beneficial. But does not this argument reflect upon the Almighty in appointing a day of rest? No. God's purpose was that man might worship Him. It is this religious sanction that He has put upon it that forever tends to preserve it from becoming a day of idleness. God has established it as a memorial of Him, and to call man's mind to Him. It is to be kept holy, not civilly. Further, man's physical needs are not considered in it at all. We are to work 6 days, because God did so, and rest the 7th day because He did. Not for us to rest because it may endanger our health, but we work and rest because the Lord did so, and not because man needs 1 day in 7 for physical rest. Man's spiritual needs are all that are considered in the commandment. But when a state forces men to rest on Sunday, not being able to attach to the day the sanction that God attaches to His Sabbath, it becomes simply a day of idleness and wickedness. Dr. Kraft said to the Knights of Labor in Indianapolis, in reply to the question, could not this weekly rest day be secured without reference to religion? A weekly day of rest has never been permanently secured in any land, except on the basis of religious obligation. Joseph Cook says, you will in vain enforce the day of rest unless you enforce also the worship. Dr. Kraft says, I have received written answers from about 150 persons, many of them manufacturers, to the following question. In your observation of clerks, mechanics, and other employees, which class are in the best physical and mental condition for the renewal of business on Monday mornings, those who are churchgoers, or those who spend the Sabbaths in picnics and other pleasures? The answer is churchgoers. The churchgoers are worth 25% more on average. The Sabbath observers and churchgoers, whether laborers, mechanics, merchants, or professional men, are in better condition to enter upon work on Monday morning than those who spent Sunday in pleasures of even a comparatively innocent kind. Churchgoers can be recognized in a crowd, clean, healthy, prosperous. Now, if Sunday laws are defensible for health, then only those who go to church get the benefit. Now, if this proves anything, it proves the right to force a man to go to church. So then all their arguments go to prove that worship and religion must go with the Sunday law, or it becomes a worse day than any other. What will come then? The state will furnish to the church the power to compel men to worship, to save them from the effects of idleness. This is exactly what happened in the 4th century, and here comes in another source of evil. It multiplies hypocrites and gets the people into a habit of meanness and dishonesty, so that every way they turn, every step they take, only increases the wickedness, and must eventually bring on a train of calamity they little dream of.